So I'm Mahesh Balakrishnan. Higher. Okay. I'm Mahesh Balakrishnan, and I'm going to be presenting Ricochet, which is a time-critical multicast protocol. And this is work done with Ken Berman, Amar Fanishai, and Stefan Plaisch. So over the last decade, data centers have taken over the world. Today, almost any application you can think of runs on a data center. Within data centers, data is often replicated on multiple machines. This is done for many different reasons: fault tolerance, performance, high availability. And when you replicate data on multiple machines, to update it, you have to use multicast, or the abstraction of one-to-many communication. To give you a better idea of how multicast is used in commercial data centers, take a look at this example. Financial applications typically subscribe to equities. So in this example, there are three equities, and you have nodes subscribing to different subsets. In the real world, there are typically thousands of equities, and each node subscribes to maybe hundreds of them. Current commercial publish-subscribe products map pub-sub topics down to multicast groups. So what that means is that if a node is subscribed to many different topics, it ends up being in many different multicast groups. This is a niche application, but we found that this kind of pattern of overlapping groups is in fact fairly common. Consider, for example, that these could be cache invalidation groups, and each node could be caching some subset of the items in the data center. If you have a lot of groups in your system, that has a very important implication that each group has low data rate. So on average, any given group can have very low data rate. Why is this so? Well, if you have a node splitting its bandwidth among, say, 1,000 groups, then each group necessarily has to have low data rate. Further, in settings such as finance, typically you have zip distributions. There could be one equity that's very popular, say Microsoft, and you could have other equities where you're receiving an update once in a second. This is very significant. It affects the performance of communication protocols very significantly. So I want you to keep it in your head, and I'll be coming back to it during the talk. The second implication is that even though each group has very low data rate, nodes can be fairly highly loaded in aggregate because they are in many different groups, and they're receiving data from many different sources. Given that these are cheap commodity end hosts, it's very easy for nodes to get overloaded. When nodes get overloaded, we ran experiments on a couple of different data center test beds, and we found that overloaded end hosts tend to drop packets. So recovering these lost packets is crucial, and recovering it fast. For some applications, this is obvious. If you're running a stock exchange, you don't want to recover packets half a second later. And these are typically known as mission-critical applications. However, I would like to posit that for any real-world application, it's really, really important to recover data fast. An example would be a commercial bookstore, an e-commerce website, say. If the inventory of a bookstore is off by, say, half a second, the bookstore could lose a lot of money due to underselling and overselling. So staleness of data translates into actual real-world dollar loss. The requirement then is for the ability to recover packets very, very quickly and to do it in scalable fashion. And that brings me to the problem statement. We want to recover lost multicast packets very quickly, and we want to do it scalably. What does scalably mean? It means that we want to support a large number of receivers in a single group. This is the conventional definition of scalability. As we saw in the last talk, that's what scalability means to most people. However, we also want to support a large number of sources to a single group. In the financial setting, there could be multiple nodes sending different kinds of data to the same group. An equity could have stock quotes, it could have news updates, things of that nature. But most importantly, we want to scale in the number of groups in the system. We want each node to be able to reside in many different groups, maybe hundreds, and still have very fast packet recovery. For the remainder of this talk, I'm first going to explain the solution space of existing reliable multicast protocols, and I'm going to tell you why they don't work in settings with lots of senders and lots of groups. And subsequently, I'm going to motivate the Ricochet solution. So multicast research has been going on for two decades almost, and a lot of different solutions exist. And we looked at this design space with a very specific question. How does the latency of recovering lost packets scale as you increase the number of groups per node? For certain protocols, we found that you simply could not scale to lots of groups. For example, acknowledgement tree-based protocols typically construct per-group structures. It's not clear at all how you would scale those. So we ignored those. For the remainder, we found that a very fundamental relationship held. The latency of recovering lost packets is inversely dependent on data rate. The key point, though, is that data rate for different protocols means different things. For existing protocols, data rate typically means the rate at which a single sender is sending to a single group. And I'm going to explain why this is true for a couple of existing protocols. And then what we're going to try to attempt to do in this talk is see if we can change the definition of data rate in some sense so a protocol's performance depends on the data rate in the system as an aggregate. So example number one of an existing multicast protocol is scalable reliable multicast. This was developed almost a decade back by Sally Floyd and others. And this is somewhat dated. It's almost a decade old. But it's very significant because most existing commercial multicast technology is derivative of SRM. I'll come to the graph in a second. The mechanism that SRM uses to discover packet loss, a receiver drops a packet, it finds out about the loss of the packet when it receives the next packet from the same sender in the same group. This is called sender-based sequencing. And it's obvious that if you use this mechanism, the time it takes you to realize that you have lost a packet depends on the rate at which a single sender is sending to a single group. We actually ran SRM on a cluster, and we observed that as we increased the number of groups on the x-axis from 1 to 128, we found that the latency taken to discover packet loss went up linearly. That's a log scale. And at 128 groups, if each node was splitting its bandwidth into 128 groups, we found that it took 8 seconds for a receiver to discover that it had lost a packet. And this is actual technology running on today's data centers. Example number two of an existing protocol that does not scale is standard forward error correction. So FEC, as it's known, is very nice because it imposes proactive overhead on the system. The idea is that for every R data packets that a sender sends out, it generates C error correction packets, and if a receiver drops a data packet, it can recover using a repair packet. So FEC provides you with a tuning knob. The more overhead you use, the faster you can recover, and in some sense, it's intrinsically time critical in the sense that if a node loses a packet, it does not induce more traffic. It does not have to wait for retransmissions. It can just wait for the next repair packet to arrive. However, to generate an error correction packet, the sender has to wait until it has R data packets. So you can see that, again, this relationship holds that a receiver cannot recover from loss until it has received enough data packets from the sender. So latency is inversely proportional to data rate. Data rate is, again, at a single sender to a single group. Notice that the example I showed you with a lot of groups in the system, each group could have very low data rates, maybe a packet a second. And if you use this kind of a scheme and you plug in some value for R, say 10, then it's going to take you 10 seconds before you can do anything about packet loss. So I showed you that existing techniques have a problem. What do we do about it? So the first key idea in Ricochet is to move error correction to the receivers of a multicast. So in the picture to the right, you have two receivers, R1 and R2, and they're receiving the same data. They're in the same group. R2 loses a packet because it's overloaded, and R1 generates an XOR of the data it receives, and it sends it over to R2. Now, note that R2 can recover the missing packet, F in this case, from the XOR it received. This has an important limitation. You can recover at most one missing packet. That renders this basic protocol almost useless. So one question is, you know, can we deal with bursty loss, which is typically what we'd expect? I'm going to defer that until we get to the system design. And the way we structure this protocol is by having each receiver generate an XOR from incoming data and sending it to C randomly selected receivers. Remember that C is a parameter to the protocol. R, C determines how much C error correction packets for every R data packets. So it's the knob that you use to turn up the error correction. Everyone does this. So every receiver picks C, say, let C be 2. So every receiver picks 2 other guys in the group, and it sends an XOR to them. Now, this has the nice property that it's a gossip-style dissemination structure, so it scales infinitely in the number of receivers in a group. And it also provides you with the nice tuning knob that traditional FEC does. But most importantly, what we have achieved here is to have data rate in this relationship. Latency is inversely proportional to data rate for all protocols. But for this protocol, data rate means the data rate in the group across all senders. So if you have 100 senders sending a packet a second to a group, latency now depends on received data rate. The question now is, how can we take this protocol and extend it to lots of groups? And here's the basic principle. I'm showing you the timeline for two nodes, N1 and N2. They're receivers in multicast groups. N1 and N2 have joined two groups, A and B. They're receiving data from A and from B. N2 is overloaded, it loses packet B2. N1 sends an XOR comprised of 5 data packets from A, once it has that many data packets, and it sends an XOR with 5 data packets in group B. So recovery happens when N2 receives the B XOR. Can we do better? Well, of course, because N1 and N2 are in the same groups, N1 can send N2 an XOR that's essentially a composite of A and B. And this is a very simple idea, but it decreases the latency of packet loss recovery tremendously. How do we make this very simple idea work when you have lots of overlapping groups? Step one is for each node to be aware of overlap. So in this example, this is the view of the world from the point of view of node N1. And N1 is in 3 groups, A, B, and C. N1 decomposes this view into disjoint intersections. So N3 is in the disjoint intersection A, N2 is in the disjoint intersection B. And importantly, N1 is not aware of groups that it is not part of. So if you have a group D that's overlapping with B, N1 is not aware of it. It does not see the intersection BD. What do we do with this information? So if you remember the basic receiver-based FEC protocol, it was that N1 would generate an XOR from incoming data, and it would select, say, 5 other nodes in group A, the guys in green, and it would send the XOR to them. Well, to optimize this for overlap, N1 now selects targets for its XOR from disjoint intersections and not the entire group. What does this let us do? We want to send XORs to the intersection ABC that comprise of data from all 3 groups. Whereas sending an XOR to the intersection AB, we want to send data that's only in groups A and B and not C. So the composition of an XOR depends on the intersection it's going to. Accordingly, we independently select fractions of C from each intersection. And if you see those numbers, essentially all we are doing is we're taking the proportional fraction of C and we are selecting that many targets from the intersection. If you add all of those together, you get 5 back. So on average, you're selecting the same number of packets from the group. There is some complexity involved in this because you're going to run this decomposition for 2 groups, in that if you want to send one XOR to AB, as part of your group A error correction mechanism. Well, if you do the same thing for B, you're going to get a different number. We get around that by sending the minimum of all the numbers that the groups give us, and then we compensate for the missing packets by sending more XORs to the intersection from the other group. I'm not going to go into detail. You can find that in the paper. The most important point about this slide, though, is that now we have achieved something fairly nice. Latency is now inversely proportional to aggregate data rate, in the sense that recovery traffic within intersections occurs as fast as it can. And therefore, we have come quite close to making latency inversely proportional to the aggregate data rate in a group. So what are the overheads like? The first comment that many people make when they see this kind of decomposition of groups into regions, disjoint intersections, is that, hold on, if you have n groups, won't you have an exponential number of intersections? Well, that's not really true, because we are interested only in occupied intersections. N1 is interested only in intersections that have another node in them. That's point number one. So that means the total number of intersections you track has to be less than the total number of known nodes. And the second point is you end up not knowing everybody in your data center. You end up knowing about nodes that only share a multicast group with you, which is really not that much overhead at all. Point number two, if we're generating all these XORs from incoming traffic and we're running time-critical apps on top of this, is this really going to work fast enough? Well, I'm going to show you actual experimental data later on, but XORs are blindingly fast on today's machines, and typically we take something like 150 to 200 milliseconds. That's actually microseconds per packet. Bandwidth overhead, this is an error correction protocol. It follows the same kind of formulaic bandwidth overhead that FEC provides. So for values of R and C, you can easily compute how much excess bandwidth you're using. And the last point, to do all of this, Ricochet requires a group membership service to tell it what the groups are. However, the GMS, as it's known, does not have to know about intersections. It can be any GMS, any per group, conventional GMS. And secondly, Ricochet does not require up-to-date state. So if the membership is stale, then performance is going to degrade progressively. So if there's a node in the membership that actually is failed, it does not really matter that much. So we implemented Ricochet and we ran it on a 64-node cluster at Cornell that we believe is a very reasonable approximation of a data center. It's got 2-3 layers of switching, and these are fairly cheap blade servers. So these are 1.3 gigahertz nodes. They're running commodity Linux. We used three loss models to model real-world loss. I'm going to come to that on the next slide, why we did that and what we did. And lastly, to generate these patterns of overlap, we used a very simple model where we could increase the degree of overlap in some sense. So question number one, this is a reliable multicast protocol. It's designed to recover from loss. Does loss occur in the data center? Where does it occur? We ran experiments on multiple data center style test beds. One of them was the one we have at Cornell. Another one was Emulab at Utah. And in this graph, this is exactly the same graph at two different nodes. And they are in the same switching segment. Node N1 is subscribed to two groups, A and B, and it's overloaded. So you can see the traffic rate up there. That's the spiky line. Below that is the loss burst. So you can see that N1 is suffering quite a bit here. N2, on the other hand, has joined only one group, A. And it's not overloaded. It's doing fine. It's not losing any packets. Now, 2 points here. Number one, N1 on top is losing packets that N2 is getting, which means that packet loss is independent. It's occurring at the end host. It strongly implies that. Secondly, loss is bursty. And the burst length seems to be between 10 and 40 packets. Accordingly, we modeled bursty loss in three ways. Firstly, we used a uniform random dropping of packets for a certain loss rate, which is terribly unrealistic, but it was useful in helping us understand how Ricochet behaves. Secondly, we used a fixed length burst model where we parameterize it with, say, 10, and it just keeps dropping 10 packets in a row for some average. And thirdly, we used a Markov model that drops packets in bursts of varying length, but maintains the average at some number. So result number one, we claim that Ricochet is a reliable multicast protocol that's time critical. To be so, Ricochet has to recover all lost packets, and it has to do so very quickly. So the three graphs you see are at different loss rates. If you look at the rightmost, it's a very high loss rate, 20%, but it highlights the areas of the graph better. So you can see that the lateral error correction recovers most lost packets very quickly, within 50 milliseconds. And any packets that are not recovered, that's the bump to the right. At around 150 milliseconds, you see a small bump. That's packets that are being recovered using a very simple NAC layer. Now, one question is, if we can do NAC recovery this fast, why don't we just do NAC recovery? Why are other people's NAC mechanisms so slow? Well, LEC has the very nice property that even if you can't recover from packet loss, so you recovered 84% in that example, 16% wasn't recovered. However, discovery happens extremely quickly. You discovered packet loss, but then you had too many errors in the XOR, essentially. So you know about loss. You can go get it after some time, and that's why you have that bump, because we parameterized it to recover after 100 milliseconds. Claim number two was Ricochet scales. It can support hundreds of groups. So on the left, you have the percentage of packets recovered using Ricochet. That was the, you know, the previous graph, the thing before 50 milliseconds. That's what this average is. And to the right, you have the average latency at which they recover it. So you can see that Ricochet is essentially insensitive. We pushed it to 1,000 groups per node, and it still performed almost exactly the same as if every node were in one big group. And point to note, SRM at a similar scale was two orders of magnitude slower. Third claim was that Ricochet is lightweight, that you can actually run applications on top of it. To the right, we have the number of XORs each receiver is taking per data packet. And you can see that it's bounded at the value of C. In this example, we used 8,5 as R, C. And what does that mean? It means that the time you spend per data packet doing all this protocol stuff is limited to around 250 milliseconds, 300 microseconds, microseconds at even 1,000 nodes. So that's essentially a third of a millisecond, which means that you can support packet throughputs of 3,000 to 4,000 packets. I showed you that losses are bursty. And earlier on, I made the claim that, you know, even though XORs can recover only one missing packet, Ricochet can do much, much better. Is this true? This graph says that without modification, Ricochet is okay, but it's not very great. If you see this, you know, if the burst is between 5 and 10 packets, we do quite well. We're recovering, you know, 90% of the packets at some good latency. But as we push that burst length to, say, 40, performance begins to degrade to the point where LEC is useless. However, we managed to fix this with a very simple optimization called staggering or interleaving. So in traditional FEC, this has been used for quite some time. Staggering means a stagger of two, for instance, means you would encode XORs from every other packet. So you'd generate one XOR from the first, the third, and the fifth, and so on, and then another one from the second, the fourth, and so on. In standard FEC, this gives you burst resilience of the stagger length. If you have a stagger length of two, you can support a burst of two. However, in LEC, because of factors that you can find in the paper, it's fairly interesting, we find that a small stagger gives us amazing burst resilience. So down at the bottom, you can see that with a stagger of 6, we can recover from bursts of 100 packets at a time, and we manage to recover 90% of those within 50 milliseconds. So in fact, Ricochet does work in extremely bursty scenarios. And that brings me to my conclusion. The way multicast is used today in data centers is fairly interesting. Multicast is used in lots of groups. These groups tend to overlap dynamically. And a group can have many senders. Groups can have varying data rates. In these kind of settings, existing reliable multicast protocols simply fail to work. Ricochet is the first protocol that actually recovers packets very quickly in any kind of arbitrary grouping pattern. We are in the process of layering Ricochet under higher level web service platforms to see how it supports application level metrics. And one of these we're developing at Cornell, it's called Tempest. The other is the second version of the Apache Access framework. We're working with them to layer Ricochet as their clustering transport. And you can download Ricochet, there's a download available at that URL. Thank you.
So you pitch this as a cluster environment, and I'm trying to think about how it might be extended in a wide area, and it seems like the main issue is that you're going to have synchronization requirements because I need to send you a lateral packet that's of some use to you, and I have to have some idea about the sync between me and you. Although at the same time, if we're downloading the same stream, it seems like we could somehow bound the skew. So I was wondering, had you given a thought into how you might apply this in a wide area by somehow ensuring that my skew is by some fixed amount?
Right. Well, the first thing I can think of if you run this in a wide area environment is that losses are not independent anymore across nodes. If you're in the same routing segment and the router drops the packet, then both of you lose it. So you need some, the first thing that comes to my mind is you need some intelligent way of picking people to talk to such that they're not going to lose the same packets. And the loss model will be completely different. You're going to be sharing this routing framework with other traffic, and I think you know you won't see these kinds of bursty loss anymore. But I agree that there's a definite term. I don't think anybody has really looked at wide area multi-group scenarios per se for multicast. We are doing it at Cornell. There's a separate system called Quicksilver Multicast where we're looking at high throughput when you have a lot of groups. But here we're focused very narrowly on data centers.